Welcome to a special Friday episode of Conduct Detrimental, joined this week by my guy, Zach Bryce. And Zach, been a minute since you've been on the podcast. Welcome back, my friend.
Always good to be back. Been a little bit, but just a hiatus, not really going anywhere. So happy to be back for sure.
So we're going to do something a little special today. We have basically the last Friday of every month. Stephanie Weisenberger and I have done what we call our sports professional development series. You know, last week or last month, we had on Zach Hiller, a sports agent and the founder of LAA Sports and Agency, Sports Entertainment. Zach is a client of my firm. Zach had a lot of good stories. And we brought Zach on last week to talk about networking strategies and, you know, just different creative ways that people have found a way to get into the sports industry. So we decided to run it back this month. We had on as guest Morgan Belvedere. She's basically the head of the WWE NIL program. A lawyer. She was very involved in student athlete NIL, this big entity that's helping with collectives across the country. And a former student of mine, John Adrey, who is an associate attorney and an agent at Paradigm Sports. So he reps, the agency reps Conor McGregor. You can look him up. They're very, very big agencies. So we're going to do this episode. Zach, you and I are going to do a little bit of business in the front end. And then the meat of this episode is really going to be the audio ripped straight from that panel. We always get good reviews of those. And a lot of people ask, where can I find the audio? Where can I find the video? So we're going to put this up on YouTube and we're going to use the audio here. But Zach, I am per sources. I think you caught a little bit of our session. I know you were in the last one. What'd you think? Early thoughts before we'll chat. But what'd you think of our session? I always enjoy doing them.
No, it's always great to have sessions like this. And thinking about, first of all, it wasn't that long ago that I was in the position that a lot of these people are, where they're thinking about going to law school or thinking about doing something with sports law. And I'm certainly not at the end of that process, but it's always good to kind of see some of the advice that and be able to give some of the advice that I wish that I had. And then also hear from these people in the fields related to sports doing really interesting and great things and hearing kind of their stories, which is always helpful no matter where you are in your journey, whether it's sports law or with any career, really.
You know, it's fun. Like, you know, there's so many people that reach out and they you know, people are trying to find ways and you know, people are reaching out to everybody across the country every day. How do I get into sports? So, you know, there's only so many hours in the day and we wanted, you know, and this is kind of the impetus behind creating conductdetrimental.com at one point. You know, it's helpful, you know, it's great having an audience for our podcast, but if it's just me and Dan, you know, that's we're only going, hey, I don't know. It's only like the tip of the iceberg. Like we want to help people get into the space. So that's why we've done a lot here. And Zach, you've been a big part of that. You know, started with Mike Lawson, who's, you know, on the NIL Hour, he was our first producer. And then, you know, Mike became Taryn, became Jason. And then, you know, kind of have this, I don't know. I think we have over 100 plus in our little conduct world between featured writers and board people. So that part's really fun. And we're inviting kind of that next crop. We got a lot of high schoolers on, a lot of 1Ls, college kids, and you know, some older people like my, I guess I'm old, but you know, people that want to lateral into the space, having been an attorney for a couple of years, following, you know, my path. You know, I was out of sports for 6 years, and then, you know, through this podcast, this platform, among another number of things, was able to kind of find my way back in. But it's all good. So I want to put that here, and then you know, for our, you know, more senior attorneys that listen to this, I won't shout anybody out, but I'm told we have. I was told this week we have some fairly big college sports administrators that listen to this podcast. So shout out to those that have reached out. But yeah, I mean, you get those calls a lot and it's easy to mail them in and just kind of like give kind of a BS informational interview. And just, you know, I had so many of those when I was in college. I hated them. So when I do those calls, I try to, you know, I don't respond to everybody that asks for an informational, but if somebody really writes me a beautiful, well-crafted note, you know, maybe they're referred through a friend, but I really try to give a half hour, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour, you know, and I really try to give people kind of some stories, some helpful advice tailored to their particular path. So, you know, whether you're a young attorney or senior attorney, I think there's going to be something for you in this particular conversation. And then, you know, just put yourself in the shoes of someone who was a younger lawyer that was trying to get into the space. So, you know, we got to get back what we can, and we got to help train that next generation of sports lawyers. Cause I'm an old man, and Zach, we got to empower your generation now to carry the torch.
Yeah. And it's a great way to do that in a setting that reaches a wide selection of people at the same time. I mean, it's great to be able to have those, you know, in-person or virtual one-on-one meetings, but it's also super valuable to be able to disseminate that information further And with the calls themselves, and then also with having that audio available for anyone else that wants to listen. So it's a definitely a great opportunity, and can't wait to share the rest of the interviews with you guys in just a little bit.
So before we do that, some business, our show is sponsored by Better Edge, the social betting platform. We are right around the corner. We are weeks away from the start of football season. If you want to do some baseball betting now, use our promo code CONDUCT on Better Edge, the social betting platform. It's the best way. If you're listening to this, and we know we've had some diehard listeners that have been with us now, the best way to support our show and make a little money, right? You get $20 free on sign up over at Better Edge. So, if you need our promo code, you need the double secret extra promo code, that would be great. But that's the best way to support our show. Okay, Zach, this week in the wide world of sports, we were doing, we'll hit a little bit of sports law here, then we'll go to the panel at the end. The panel is about 55 minutes. So that's going to be the bulk of this episode. It was funny. I was kind of going through topics, and I know you're following this, but like, Northwestern, there's now five lawsuits that have stemmated from the initial kind of Fitzgerald firing. So five players have filed lawsuits. We had the Bronny James cardiac event. I feel like I have to be careful on that one because we do some work in the basketball space, and sometimes I hear things that are not necessarily public. So we'll be careful on that one. Obviously, we're watching both those issues very closely. The issue I wanted to touch upon fairly briefly, and then we'll get to the show. We'll talk about it in the back end. I don't know how do I phrase this. What do you think about all these NFL betting suspensions? Are you following this at all?
Definitely following this. It's been a while since I've written an article for Conduct, been doing video and audio and everything else on the production side, so I hadn't written in a while. But one of the last ones I wrote was one talking about all the betting suspensions. I've been on the podcast a couple times talking about it. It's definitely something that I have talked about and follow because it's truly crazy to me.
Well, it's funny, like, I did, I think as our listeners know, I've been doing this show Sports Better Court on Wednesdays. So they wanted me to do a deep dive into this recent string of suspensions. So I think we just hit number 10. It's been the Broncos, the Lions. There's a couple teams that have been hit by this. I guess the easiest way to explain this is you get a 6-week suspension if you are, and there's obviously shades of gray in here, and we don't know exactly what the particular offenses are. The NFL has been very mum on the details, but generally, 6-week suspension if you were betting on sports, period, non-NFL games while at the NFL facility or some form of practice facility or with the team or just in a place you shouldn't be betting. Now, the substance of the bet's not that big of a deal, right? According to the NFL, non-NFL games is the language that they use in the press releases. Now, if you are betting on NFL games, even if they're not your own, those are an indefinite suspension. Now, I get it. If you are betting on NFL games, you are more likely as an NFL player to have inside information, right? Maybe you went to college with the wide receiver coach or this one or that one, right? You're in a world where you're very possible to have some inside information. So for NFL bets, I don't care where you are. You could be in the facility, you could be on Mars. Those are bets that NFL players should stay away from. They're just too close to home. It's those other half of the bets, right? It's been about 50-50 of these 10 suspensions we've had thus far. These onside bets versus the betting on the games. And then there was Isaiah Rodgers with the Colts, allegedly, I'm just, I'm trying not to get sued here, but he bet on a series of prop bets. There's a report that, and I think Justin Mader covered this when I think that was our last episode altogether, the three of us. But I believe there's a report that Isaiah Rodgers bet on the rushing total of a Colts running back, and he was a Colts defensive player. So that's like, I don't know, you can call that indefinite suspension or lifetime suspension. That's the worst of the worst. But I'm just watching these suspensions here, and I'm like, who could have thought? Who could have thought that every single commercial that you see at this point, being a sports betting commercial, that more players would get caught up with it? But a little bit of a self-inflicted wound by these over-inclusive rules by Roger Goodell to punish on-site betting on like college baseball or volleyball. Like, I have no idea why those were worthy of a suspension.
Yeah, it's really tough. And the thing that makes it so expansive too is it is physically on site at the facility, but it also includes team buses, team hotel rooms, team planes, anything that you're doing that is related to your employment as an NFL player and you're using that service or space, that counts. And so if you're traveling and you're sitting on a bus, you may be scrolling and pull up, oh, well, there's a college baseball game. I'll bet $50 on that or whatever amount of money. And then that's how some of these people are getting caught, is because they're not really thinking that it applies to them at that moment because they're not in, quote unquote, the facility, but still definitely within it. Also, Dan, an interesting development that I've seen that I saw in Front Office Sports actually is while the NFL continues to crack down on players betting, they have recently licensed the use of NFL team logos and NFL related IP to be used in an actual physical slot machine in casinos. So it's kind of funny to see the NFL take the money of legal gambling and other situations, whether it be slot machines or sports betting or however, installing sportsbook in the stadiums, but then having such ridiculous and kind of over-restrictive restrictions for players.
I think the word is just, I mean, the easy way to say it, you're being very diplomatic. I think it's just very hypocritical. I think that's the just the easiest way to explain it. You know, it is what it is. We're going to keep watching it, but you know, and I want to point out, like people are saying, why is this only happening in the NFL? Major League Baseball, as far as I know, and I'm not quite sure in the NBA and the NHL, but Major League Baseball does not have this on-site rule. Now, you know, I'm not quite sure how players are being caught. Unless they're, you know, and I hate to say this, unless they're dumb enough to be betting in their own name, I'm not sure how players are getting caught, or a wife's name, or someone within the same residence. I understand there are sites out here, and you know, I know the guys affiliated with that betting company called US Integrity. They're in charge of trying to, you know, detect suspicious betting patterns. But if bets are being done for like $20, and you know, I'm just having a hard time seeing the mechanics of how these guys are getting caught. There must be something that. I know it's careless, but it is what it is. So I don't know. We're watching that closely. It's not going to be the first suspension nor the last. But I hear you that there is very clear hypocrisy going on. The only thing I wanted to touch on, I think the NIL hour, those guys are going to come back next week, I believe. And I guess I can say it here. This is what I've been told. Matt Brown from Extra Points is going to be our guest on the College Sports Podcast, the NIL hour podcast next week. People can Google Matt Brown. He's a good follow on Twitter, but NIL hour, I just want to give those guys their plugs. They've been doing a fantastic job getting guests. I just want to touch upon it here. This is just a little business. And then you know, we'll get to, I think, to the panel, and Zach, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I get so many texts, and I'd say of my sports practice at my firm, I think probably about half my clients are college sports or NIL related clients. And I got all these calls this week. What's going on with these federal NIL bills? Well, you think something's going on? Like, is that going to change the world? And then, you know, then you have people, and I don't want to make light of anybody, but some people, like, if a federal bill is passed, does that mean that the state laws are going to go away? So the answer to the last question is yes. If a federal bill is passed, we don't have to worry about the state law bills anymore. But I am not quite sure a federal bill is that close. I'm not. Can have a lot of proposals, and just put it this way. And I learned something probably about a year or two ago. We had Eric Lesser. Dan and I had this Eric Lesser on, this state senator from Massachusetts, to talk about sports betting. And it's an episode, I'm sure people can find it in the archives. He said something so interesting. He was basically explaining that when everybody wants a bill to pass, everyone's really into, like, right, a lot of politicians are proposing these federal bills. I think we've had 10 plus bills to date. When a lot of politicians want something, then it becomes kind of this grandstanding battle, is whose bill's going to get passed. And when you see a lot of bills proposed simultaneously, it's actually the opposite. You might think there's a lot of momentum behind a federal bill. Not necessarily. There's momentum behind a bill being passed, but when you have a lot of different bills that are being proposed, it's a question of whether you're going to get the support for any one particular bill, and whether people are motivated to shoot down other people's bills. So that's why it's a little bit easier on the state level to pass these bills. You know, New York's got now two bills passed in the time frame it's taken the federal government to get zero passed. So just want to point that out. Don't be so concerned with the content of any of these federal bills right now, at least from what I'm hearing. And this is just today as we record this. I don't know if any one particular federal bill is getting any momentum more than another. And until you hear these bills start to slowly walk away, right, I think it's just kind of a cluster, for lack of a better term here.
Yeah, that's definitely a really interesting quote that you bring up. And I definitely have to agree. I mean, if there's one or two bills, that's another story that allows for a little bit more unity. But whenever you've got 10 plus, 12 plus bills that have been proposed, well, that means that you've got each of those representatives wanting their bill to be passed so that they can go back whenever they're trying to get reelected to their constituents and say, oh, look what I did. This was a great thing. And that's not really going to foster actual collaboration and coming together to pass one bill. So I definitely have to agree with that sentiment. I think while it is interesting to know that there are so many that have been proposed, I have to agree that it's not likely that any of them are particularly close to being the bill at this point as we record this right now.
I'm with you. I guess we'll see. I'm always happy to be wrong, but let's just say, like I tell, this is what I told my clients this week, and this is not attorney client. I'm not trying to give anybody legal advice, but I'm just, I'm just not hearing that there's traction behind these federal bills. These any one bill in particular. Certainly that could change, but I'm not hearing it. So don't get so concerned. I know Amanda Kristovich, who's been on with us a lot, the front office sports, college sports reporter. She, I think there were two different federal bills that were created this week, and she's all over them. She's great. She had a really funny tweet. I think it was Wednesday, but like, please God, don't let there be another federal bill proposed this week. And so, good on Amanda for covering it. But until you hear otherwise, just worry about the states for now. Worry about the states. Okay, Zach, let's do this. I think it's time to kick it to the panel. So again, I know we talked at the beginning. Stephanie Weisenberger, and people know Stephanie. I think that unless you're new, Stephanie's been with us for I think almost 2 years now, maybe three. Stephanie is now an intellectual property attorney at MLB Network. She's got a great story, a great path. We talk about in the panel. Morgan Belvedere is someone that I've really known since I've kind of got into the sports law space a couple years ago, and I met Morgan when she was a law student. Morgan has now gone on. I think at one point she was, and she'll correct me if I'm wrong, but general counsel, I believe, of student athlete NIL and an NIL organization that helps run some of these collectives. She was a very young general counsel, was like a year out of school. Morgan and I, there was a period of time where we almost ended up at the same firm, and then neither of us ended up at it. I will not say the name of that firm, but it's a very a notable firm. Would have been interesting, but yeah, I've talked to Morgan through her career changes, and she's now found herself at WWE, which is a fantastic landing spot. And then John Adrey, who I mentioned, is a student of mine, who's now at one of the premier MMA agencies in the world. So I thought both of those two were excellent to have on. They both talk about their present roles. They talk about how they got there. And then we give very, very non, I think non-traditional advice. Like, yeah, some of it's going to be like, I just enjoy, and I think our whole group enjoys educating people. Yeah, so when we do these podcasts, we do them for free. We do the sports career panels for free. And, just because we're such nice people, Zach, if you can't make it during the 12 o'clock hour on the last Friday of every month, you know what we do, Zach? We put it out on the podcast for free. How about them apples?
It's absolutely unparalleled value. I mean, it's free and we really do put it out there, and it is such a great resource to have really at any point whenever we do speaker series like this, and then also all of the information and the services that Conduct provides to students that are writing or looking to get their career started or wherever you fall in there. So it really is fantastic, and I'm excited to hear and have you guys hear what the panel has to say.
So let's do that. Let's kick it to the panel. So again, Stephanie Weisenberger, Morgan Belvedere, and John Adrey. You should follow those guys on socials, and they wanted me to make sure I said that. So without further ado, let us kick it to the Sports Professional Development Series. Okay, I think we can get rolling here. So first of all, for those that have not entered one of these before, my name is Dan Lust. I am the host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast. Stephanie Weisenberger and I will be your moderators. I'll let Stephanie introduce herself momentarily. So we try to do these kind of the last Friday of every month, and I'm just going to spotlight everyone so I can do this as a normal person. Still working out the tech issues here. Here we go. Okay. So the panelists today, it's going to be myself and Stephanie moderating. We have Morgan and John Adrey, who are going to be our speakers or our panelists. Morgan is with WWE. John is with Paradigm Sports. That is a UFC based agency. So we kind of have our combat sports kind of panel today. So what I want to do before we get started, Stephanie, this is our second installment, our second workshop. You want to kind of give people a recap of what we did last time and what we're trying to do today, and then I'll give a little bit of an intro to Morgan and John.
Yeah, so I know thank you for all of you guys who joined us last time. And if you didn't join us last time, then welcome to workshop number two. Our first workshop had Zach Hiller as our special guest, who's the co-founder or founder and president of LAA Sports and Entertainment, a sports agency who represents many prominent NFL players for the most part, but they also have several other athletes in different varying capacities as well. But for Ravens fans out there, you might remember Zay Flowers. They represent him. And so Zach was able to give us an interesting and really fascinating perspective on how he built up his own agency. He made Forbes 30 Under 30 and is a relatively young agent in the agency world, but has managed to really build up the agency, like I said. And he provided a lot of feedback and interesting perspective on, you know, what you need to do in order to break into the industry. And once you're in there, how you really need to, you know, continue cultivating those connections and relationships that you made in order to stay in the industry and just continue to grow. So today we are very happy to have Morgan and John with us. And, you know, obviously we're going to open it up to questions at the end here, but, you know, for the most part, we'll start with their backgrounds, obviously, and additional networking tips, you know, resume, how they really got into their current positions now. And Dan, I'll let you take it away with more of an introduction on those two.
Yeah. So I think we can get rolling here. The general gist for today, I know a lot of you and I see a lot of people in the audience, names I recognize, people reach out and they're looking to see. And really the reason that we did this, and I know Stephanie and I are the same, and I imagine Morgan and John are, we get a lot of emails of people reaching out about how to break into the sports industry. So, you know, just trying to speak to you guys, as many of you guys as possible at the same time. I have a unique story. I know Stephanie has a unique story. This is a little bit of an intro. So if you guys don't know Morgan and John, I'll give some high level. And then obviously we want to hear it directly from them, but everyone has a different path to get to a certain place. Not everybody is going to be all the way at the end of the line, like, you know, as a finished product. Like, you know, I'm 35. I still think I have, you know, more, a bigger network to build. I still think there's more to do for people in the industry. So, you know, at least the way that I approach it, and I think Stephanie and I are aligned in this way, you're trying to have to map out what you want your next 5 years to be. So don't feel overwhelmed about getting to that next place by the next month or the next, you know, next week or the next day. There's an expression like, if you wait until the time where you need your network for a job, you've waited too long. So you want to start building your networking empire today and really have kind of like a, I don't know, 2 to 3 year plan, 3 to 4 year plan, kind of right around there. So Morgan, I'm gonna start with you. Morgan's story is very interesting for a number of reasons. I think my favorite part, Morgan is at WWE. I don't think I ever stopped being a wrestling fan, but I was obviously a very Attitude Era guy back in the day. So Morgan has moved for jobs multiple times, and Morgan found her current job based on where she was at her last job. So Morgan, I'll let you explain it. Just give us kind of your high level path of your current role. And then over the course of the next half hour or so, we'll talk about kind of how you got there and some kind of unique tactics you took.
Yeah, so at WWE, I feel like my job changes on a day-to-day basis, but for the most part, I control everything, help run, direct manage everything that relates to college athletics. So NIL, our Campus Rush educational programming, tryouts, everything along those lines that touches collegiate athletes, I have a hand in. It's very exciting, especially right now in this day and age of college athletics, and from a brand perspective, we're doing things a lot differently than what you see in the media. So it's been really cool to help shape that and help, you know, hopefully find the next generation of WWE superstars.
Very cool. Morgan, and we'll certainly get into it. Morgan worked for a very brief period in the kind of the top of a kind of a growing startup, an NIL company. So Morgan went from law school to NIL to, you know, sports entertainment kind of at its best, which WWE. So and Morgan didn't mention, we'll get into it, but Morgan found WWE based on a client of her old company, or I guess like a marketing partner.
Yeah, they were a partner at the NIL Summit, and I worked with them closely for about 5-6 months leading up to it.
So part of this, and I think people give, and I don't know if people saw my LinkedIn post, I think, and we can curse on this because it's our panel, so it's fine. I think a lot of people give bullshit advice and just say, like, you got to work harder and make your resume look better. But a lot of what we want to do is kind of pointed advice. telling you where to look. So you can send like 1,000 cold emails to people. Sometimes your next opportunity might just be doing a fantastic job at your current employer. And then someone might want to pick you up to work in-house. And that's exactly what happened with Morgan. It's not a traditional path by any means. So John, we'll get into Morgan, your path in a little bit. John, I want to go to you, John. Full disclosure, John was a previous student of mine at New York Law School. John, this is the first time that we're talking, like, I guess, in a big session where I'm not your professor, just envious of your path right out of law school, working for Paradigm Sports, working for, you can explain it, but some of the highest level MMA guys in the entire world. So maybe a little bit about your current role, and then we'll kind of get into your path in a minute.
Sure. So first of all, thanks, Dan and Steph, for having us. And, you know, this speaker series that you guys do in these workshops is super, super, informative and excellent. So thank you for that. And Morgan as well. Nice to meet you. So about my role. Yeah. So I basically handle about 99% of the contracts that come through our agency, whether they're, you know, endorsement deals or, you know, if there's IC agreements that need to be drafted, demand letters, people owing us money. And then on the
people getting sued, people knocking out mascots.
Yes. No, we don't have to get into all that. He's referencing, you know, Conor McGregor's anthem.
Conor McGregor, just like the biggest UFC star in the entire world. But go ahead. Don't be humble, John.
Yeah, definitely never a dull moment. And then on the MMA side, I support our CEO, Adi Attar, with, his stable of athletes that he manages. And I'm also starting to manage some of our athletes on my own as well. So it's definitely a wild journey. It's definitely, like I said, never a dull moment. But yeah, thanks for having me.
So John, just briefly, then I want Stephanie to give a little bit of her path and then we'll kind of just open it up. So, I think everyone finds their next job in a unique way. So Morgan's story, I think, is an interesting one where she, you know, kind of, and Morgan, I'll let you explain it, but Morgan kind of found, student athlete NIL kind of at the proverbial, 11th hour in the employment hunt. And that was, she was late in the game to get the job, but ended up getting the best job for her and then ended up getting to WWE, which is fantastic. So she found her current role by being really, good with a current client or current partner of her old company. John, you ready for this? Sometimes it pays to be nice to your professors. How about that? So why are you smiling? It's not me. I wasn't the nice professor.
I don't know. Not you.
No. So, John, another good story. Sometimes, certainly I could speak to this. I'm a professor at New York Law School. I'm an adjunct, so I'm a part-time professor, and then I'm a full-time attorney. John, in the same way, at New York Law School, it's not just myself that has some sports ties. Professor David Fish is the general counsel of Paradigm Sports. Sometimes it pays to impress your professor, and I imagine you like working with Professor Fish now, Mr. Fish or David?
No, just Dave. I actually had dinner with him last night, and I told him I was going to be doing this, so he was super pumped.
So go ahead. I think it's helpful to tell that story. You never know where these contacts are going to lie.
For sure. So, yeah, sort of as Dan alluded to, I knew that Professor Fish was a professor, obviously, at New York Law School, but he was also involved with Paradigm Sports. And I've always had a fascination and, a desire to work in sports and really just passion about the business of sports. So I made sure that I got his class. I don't know how it works now, but basically you had to list your classes in terms of enrolling classes in terms of priority levels. So I made sure to take his first. And I just built a relationship with him. I asked to meet with him. I expressed I demonstrated my interest in working in the industry, and we just built a relationship. From there, he facilitated my internship with Paradigm. And, thankfully they, I guess I did a okay job and they brought me back. So
it's a good lesson. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I think it's helpful for both of you. And Stephanie, I'm going to come to you in a minute, but I guess chapter one, and we'll try to do this differently. I see a lot of people that return from our first workshops. We want to give people different lessons here. Number one, you could fire out, I know the Powerball is close to $1 billion. So yeah, you could play the lottery and just send out a bunch of emails and hope someone responds. Or the people that know you best are the ones, maybe your professors, right? Maybe the ones where you get your summer internship, maybe the ones that your current employer or partner of the firm or partner of the company you're at. But you want to impress wherever you are. So don't just go home run hitting and sending out a bunch of emails. Sometimes it's really your job is much closer. Those contacts are much closer than you can possibly think. So Stephanie told a story on, the last, our last workshop. And for those that don't know, we try to do this the last Friday of every month. So we'll at least do it for the summer, and then we'll figure out how much longer we want to go after. But Stephanie, I think for those that don't know your story about how you found your first sports job, you're a really good testament to the fact that like getting your first job is just getting your foot in the door. Like if you give up, like if you just, you're happy with your first sports job, like congrats, you know, but that's not it. Like once you get your foot kind of in that door, it's really about, like I tell people, it's not just getting your foot in the door. It's about knocking that door off the hinges when you're in. So Stephanie, I love the story about how you got your first job. So maybe share that and then I'll cede the floor to you to kind of take over.
Yeah, sure. I'll try and keep this as short as possible so we can get back to Morgan and John. But I worked with Dan at Garagos and Garagos for a while. That's kind of how I got involved with Connect Detrimental. And, you know, while there were some sports clients there, there weren't necessarily a lot. It wasn't as, you know, fulfilling in terms of sports work that I wanted it to be. And so through Connect Detrimental's website, I decided to, you know, write an article about one of the major sports that I follow, basketball, notably Giannis Antetokounmpo and his intellectual property filing, since he's very litigious in a
court. How did you say that? How did you say that last name?
Antetokounmpo.
Okay, just making sure.
Trust me, I had a lot of practice. So I, you know, decided, okay, I'm going to try and just write an article about Giannis's filings. Intellectual property was something that was very interesting. And again, just, you know, sports law isn't really a thing. Sports law kind of encompasses all different areas of law, and intellectual property is one of the major ones. So I wrote an article about Giannis's filings. Nothing came of it, but a few months after the fact, I got a LinkedIn request from Tasso Pardalis, who is Giannis's attorney, and he has his own firm in New York City. And I immediately recognized the name because it's a pretty easy to recognize a Greek name. And I reached out and I said, hi, like, thanks for connecting. I actually wrote this article about, you know, your IP filings on behalf of Giannis. Here it is. Like, let me know what you think. And he said, you know, that's exactly why I wanted to reach out and connect with you. Let me know if you're available for coffee in the next coming week. And so we ended up grabbing coffee about a week later. And by the end of that coffee meeting, he offered me a job to join his firm and work on those very filings that I had been writing about. So just an example of, you know, definitely try and put yourself out there. I was not necessarily the most outgoing or confident person when I first started law school, but I think, you know, you have to be in this industry because you need to make sure that people know who you are. You need to kind of create a brand for yourself. So that way, you know, it just opens up more and more opportunities for yourself, the more people that know you. So that's my story, but I guess we'll get back to John and Morgan here. And I think, you know, both of you guys touched on something that was interesting, and you obviously both had different paths. But, you know, John, for you, you obviously impressed when you were an intern at Paradigm. And then Morgan, you obviously impressed your client at SANIL. So I think one thing that may be helpful for the people listening is, you know, how were you proactive in those positions, and what did you do that you think, you know, showed your employer or your clients that, you know, you were willing to put in the work and kind of set yourself apart from maybe the other people that you were working with?
I know for me, I got really lucky with my job right out of law school. I'm not going to lie. As Dan alluded to, I was late to the game. Prior in law school, I worked for about 18 months with Major League Soccer Players Association. I was a law clerk, and it was right in the middle of COVID. And as we all know, COVID was pretty detrimental to sports, especially soccer. And with that, I lost a potential job opportunity. I was really hoping I could work for them, really stay in that Players Association realm. Didn't happen. And so I was, we can curse, shit out of luck throughout the bar exam. I didn't know what I was going to do, but then NIL happened. And thankfully during my time in law school, I mean, I was a former collegiate athlete. I was a gymnast at the University of Florida, was very successful at UF, was part of a team that won 3 NCAA national championships, 2 SEC championships. So I had that legitimacy of being a collegiate athlete. So when NIL came around, that I'm an attorney, I knew I could probably get some sort of job. Just what was it? And thankfully, Jason Belzer took a risk, DM'd me, and that's how I got that job. I had to work my butt off and really overcome imposter syndrome, I will say, to get to where I'm at now. Young attorney, relatively inexperienced, I will say, straight up inexperienced attorney. So relying on peers for advice, doing my research and hustling, truly hustling to make sure I was gaining that respect of my peers, that I was knowledgeable and could hold my own in a room, not only as a young attorney, but a young female attorney as well. And so with working, trying to pitch these clients and getting their respect, I really just think it came down to making sure I was extremely knowledgeable in what I was talking, knowledgeable not only about NIL, our product, what we're selling, but knowledgeable about our partners, our clients that we were working with. For WWE, I wanted to make sure I was up to date on everything in the news, up to date with how our product can enhance whatever their program was. So it was the NIL program. How can what we're doing at the summit potentially benefit them? How could they get their best ROI? And doing that with all of our other clients. And I'd say fortunately after the summit, I had a couple other job offers, but I was employing that same technique, making sure I'm knowledgeable in what we're selling, the confidence, as Stephanie alluded to, you have to be confident in this area. As well as making sure I am trying my best to maximize whatever my clients wanted out of me.
Go ahead, John. Same question.
Yeah, I think for me, once I got the opportunity to be with Paradigm, really it was about the mindset of like meeting expectations isn't enough. Like you need to exceed them. That's really just what I had in my head. And I would try to go above and beyond. I would try to make myself as available as possible, hop on as many meetings as I possibly could. Even, you know, perhaps this is former law school professor of mine, but perhaps I wouldn't, you know, take the hour that I would have utilized to study for a test. I took that and I, you know, did something that my bosses didn't ask me to do and just presented it to them. And I guess, you know, they liked it and took to it. So another thing is, so this is one thing that a mentor of mine, Scott Buckstein, always tells me. It's just like separations in the preparation, right? So any call that you have, anyone, like if you're setting up meetings, just make sure that you're prepared. Make sure you take the time because it's really important. So yeah.
So I'll jump in here. And I know I see a lot of people we have in the audience might not have the same path. So just a little bit of a recap. And they tell you when you do like DRS competitions in law school, and we don't have all lawyers I see in the crowd, but like, you know, after your first couple, 10, 15 minutes, you want to recap a little bit. That's usually helpful if you're doing a big presentation. So Morgan Morgan was a national champion gymnast of Florida, you know, has that on her resume, which is fantastic. Ends up getting a job with soccer and in NIL and then WWE. John, you weren't a national champion in any sport? Just making sure. No? Okay.
I like to think so in my head, but yeah, not officially, no.
Just checking. So, you know, people have different paths, right? And Stephanie left out of her path. Stephanie got a job with the Baltimore Orioles right in college, Steph? Or was that high school?
Yeah, that was right after college because I graduated in December. So For 6 months, I just worked for the Orioles, yeah.
So some of you might be sitting here and you might be 3, 4, 5 years out of school and you'd be like, well, I didn't, you know, is the path over for me? Is this done? So that's where most of you, I would think, know. Well, I don't want to say this, but my path is I had a job with the New York Giants. I had a lot of good jobs during law school. And then post-graduation, 6 years. And I was not working in sports at all. And then a lot of stuff, and Stephanie spoke about it. But, you know, a lot of what you can do, you know, early on, and John and Morgan both spoke to this in some sense, you have to set yourself apart in a different way. Sometimes it's writing, sometimes it's speaking, sometimes it's giving CLEs, sometimes it's going the extra mile at work, but setting yourself apart in a very different way. I did that by writing and doing LinkedIn posts and building up a following on Twitter and starting, you know, podcast, but that helped me lateral later on. So it's not to say that as a later, you know, later in life person, like if you're 3, 4 years out of school, you have no connections to sports, like you certainly can do it, but the longer you wait to write, the longer you wait to set your resume apart, the harder it is. So, you know, sports is a very competitive landscape. And obviously, you know, I lateraled in like 6 years out. But, you know, there's certainly a course to do it. Now, Morgan, I want to take you for this part. So I imagine you get a lot of outreach from students. Some you have nothing to do with, you know, law. We're all lawyers here. But what's the main piece of advice you give to someone that reaches out that wants to, you know, just start their path of breaking into sports? Someone that's like, you know, in school, like what's the main piece of advice you tell them?
Yeah. So main is start by narrowing it down because you can't be general. You can't be blind applying to every single sports job out there. Figure out first professional or college. Just from the top. For me, it was college. Yes, I loved professional sports, but my heart was always college athletics. And then from there, what excites you about professional sports? What excites you about collegiate sports? Is it a particular sport? Is it an area? And just keep narrowing down that list so that you have the most focused plan of attack. So for me, I was labor and employment. Labor and employment law was something that really excited me in law school. Why? Mainly because college athletes are consistently and have been fighting for their right to profit off their NIL. That's been just a longstanding fight. That's what got me excited. For others, that's really what I ask them. What is it in like the broader areas and how can you narrow that down? Because you're more likely, I think, to get a job that way if you have more of a narrow focus, not so much a broad focused. Because too, like when you're going to tailor your cover letters, looking at your experience, things like that, you have the best shot when it's tailored to what you actually want to do, why you're applying for it. For me, IP, that's not interesting. Like, I'm sorry, Steph, like, to me, it's just like not my forte. Okay. More power to you. But I'd be lying if I was trying to pitch somebody and pitch a firm and be like, yeah, IP, woo, when none of my background, none of my experience speaks to that. However, when you look at me looking at my background, it speaks to college athlete. It speaks to NIL. It speaks to labor and employment rights working at MLS. It speaks to those sorts of issues. And that's a story that I can tell. And that's a story that I can sell an employer. So really just trying to narrow down your focus into what you're like and matching that with your background. And I think you'll have a much better chance of success in landing that job that you want.
So speaking of that, John, you have an interesting role. You're at one of the top agencies in your particular sport, be it UFC. And I think we can say that with the amount of hardware that's being passed around Paradigm. People could do some quick Googling. But John, you wear two hats, right? You're an associate attorney and you are a kind of a new agent in that particular field. So I know a lot of people that are tuning in. I get the question a lot, you know, like are people that want to break into sports? I think agent is always a thought that people have. Maybe speak to that. What are some type of things that you're looking for in resumes when people are sending them to you, trying to be, you know, an attorney or, you know, skill sets that, you know, an agency would look for, you know, someone, you know, right out of school as an agent?
Well, I think Morgan, to your point, or to Morgan's point, like you do have to pick one bucket, right? You can't just join and say, look, I want to do all these different things, right? So in my situation, I joined as an attorney to just predominantly do legal work, right? And however, I had the opportunity once I was in to start working more closely with our athletes and sort of make that crossover, right? So I and the other thing I would just say is be relentless, right? Like don't be afraid to go after what you want. Talk to as many people as you can. Sort of to your previous point of when, or your previous question, when people reach out, what do you tell them? Like, don't stop with me, right? Keep going. So yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I can add something here because I think both Morgan and John said something that was really interesting and you guys should definitely take note of is, you know, you definitely want to make sure that you're tailoring your resumes, your cover letters, even your networking outreach emails or messages to the company that you're applying for or the person that you want to network with. I actually, a few weeks ago, got a message on LinkedIn from someone and it was clearly a copy paste because they called me the wrong name. And, you know, you can tell, even if you don't include the name in that message, you can pretty much tell fairly quickly if you just copy paste it and you're just, you know, on a hunt to just send out as many outreach emails as you can. So I think one thing that, like Morgan alluded to, is, you know, tailor your resume and make sure that you're really reflecting the type of job that you want to be in, the position that you want to be in, and what you actually, you know, get excited about. And when you're making these outreach emails, you know, don't copy and paste and send the same exact, you know, two sentence thing to every single person. It's pretty easy to tell. I think I find that the more personalized a message is, the more likely, you know, that person will be to answer. So try and find, you know, one thing, something, anything about the person that you want to speak with, just to show them that, you know, you actually do care about what they're going to be speaking to you about. You actually do want to hear their advice. It's not like you're just trying to hear anyone's advice, but you definitely want to make sure that you tailor that cover letter. And especially for cover letters, you know, you can really, really tell if you're just, you know, changing the name of the company at the top of it and not really tailoring it to that job specifically. And that's something that, you know, hiring managers will definitely notice.
I have a question, Steph.
Yes.
Are you a big LinkedIn person, or is that just unique to me? I feel like you're a LinkedIn person.
I like LinkedIn. Yeah.
Okay. So to Steph's point, Steph and I met on LinkedIn once upon a time. You know, there's, you know, like when people are posting content, you know, you kind of get a sense of who's engaging with the content. You start seeing some names. So there's ways to stand out in other ways just by sending that cold email. I said it earlier, but I think this is an important lesson. And we don't want to just give you like amorphous big picture things. Like, I think, you know, like work harder, have your resume be good, I think are important. To Stephanie's point, you know, I think at this point you have a sense of like who's sending you a template, like, hey, I'd love to, you know, pick your brain about this and that. And it, you know, while those are helpful emails, the emails that get to the top of the inbox or that become a priority to respond to are the ones where you have something in common. So I guess, I don't know, maybe we'll come up with a fun graphic for this stuff. But if you have a mutual connection with the person, like, I would lead with that. I think that's a very important thing. And let's say to Stephanie and Morgan, I think John all raised this point. You want to have a list. Stephanie and I know someone who's made their way, had a lot of success in the sports industry, who probably will be a panelist with us at some point. He had like a top 10 list of target people he wanted to get close to over the course of his career. And he made a point to, you know, every so often reach out to those people. And he thought those people would help him in his ascent. So if you do have a targeted list, right, let's say you do want to work in the UFC or you want to work, you know, for MLB Network like Stephanie, right? Like, there are obviously people at MLB Network who have some sway, right? And if you want to work on those people over the next X amount of years until the point you graduate, like, you can certainly do that. So to Stephanie's point, like, you know, there's a saying like, work harder, you know, work smarter, not harder. I almost said it backwards. But like, if you know, let's say like you went to a school like a Syracuse, or you went to a big law school like Brooklyn Law School, or, you know, U of F, right? A huge school. You can find on LinkedIn, and the reason I bring this up, you can search by like University of Florida, and you can have a, like, what might look to some like a template email. You can say, I'm reaching out to you as a fellow Gator. Like, I'm seeing some in the chat saying go Gators, like, reaching out to you as a fellow Gator. You know, I grew up in Florida like you did. And then you could look by people, you know, that live in Florida. You know, you can do that. Because I always tell people, you know, shoot your shot, right? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, which is, I think, a Wayne Gretzky saying, or at least a Michael Scott Wayne Gretzky saying. But you want to send out a lot of resumes, and you want them to seem like they're uniquely tailored. So if you can find, right, you know, just like I spoke to someone the other day who went to Syracuse. Syracuse is a huge school. If you want to look by lawyers, you know, people that have law degrees that went to Syracuse undergrad, there's thousands of people. And that paragraph of your email, that might be a template email, but they might not realize that. So I certainly think that is a move. And then to the larger point about like finding your top 10 list, like, I do that now when I'm trying to find clients for my law firm. I put together a list. I look at it. I try to see what I can do to land those particular clients. And if you really think about it, like, I don't think any of us, and not to knock people that have like vision boards, but you really need to kind of label what you want, and you want to kind of isolate them. But I think that's the kind of stuff's helpful. I should mention here, if you do have questions, certainly feel free to drop them in the chat. We'll try to answer them in the last, I don't know, before we get to the 1 o'clock hour. But if you have questions, feel free to drop them in. John, we'll go back to you here. And just so everyone knows, John has a 109 degree temperature, so he might drop dead at any moment in time. No, I'm just kidding. John, you know, we've been on this for about half an hour. Is there any type of tactics, networking that you've had success in that we haven't discussed yet?
Not necessarily that we haven't discussed yet, but I do have a story that perhaps I can share from one of my close friends who worked with the Ravens. Now he's with the Players Tribune. Jason Shalm is his name. So when we were graduating from UCF sports business, he wanted to work in the NFL. And so what he did is, apparently every NFL locker room has like a slogan or saying that's kind of like the motto of the team, right? So what he did is all 32 teams, he found what each like of their respective logos were, or their mottos, right? And he put them in individual emails tailored to each individual team, and he sent them out. And so that was just like kind of a testament to details mattering, right? Like paying attention and being able to identify with who you're reaching out to. Out of the 32 teams, only two responded. It was the Bucks and it was the Ravens. He had interviews with both, and he got job offers from both and elected to go with the Ravens. And it was just like, that story always stands out to me because like he really went above and beyond and really got creative as to how he could, you know, add value and kind of just, you know, stand out from the pack. So.
Yeah, I can add something that I think we haven't covered yet that's definitely important and that I actually found out later on after I was talking with colleagues that I now work with when they were interviewing for the position that I'm in, is that first interview is the first impression, the first real impression that you are speaking with people that you could potentially work with. You know, you need to make sure that you're presenting yourself. I know sometimes it's an illusion in the sports industry that for the first interview, you don't have to dress up for the interview because you can just wear a t-shirt, you can wear your, you know, favorite sports team's jersey, something like that. But you really do need to make sure that you're treating it like any other interview with, you know, a finance company, marketing, anything like that, because people do notice. I heard a story that you know, there was someone who showed up and they weren't wearing a suit on Zoom. And no matter what that person said throughout the interview, they weren't going to get a second interview just because of that one thing. So you definitely want to make sure that you're starting out on the right foot, because it's hard to recover if you don't. And when you're in that first interview too, like, don't think that thank you emails are, that you're too good for thank you emails. Always, always send a thank you email after an interview, after, you know, even if you don't get the job, maybe even reach out and thank them for the opportunity to even be considered for the position. When you network with someone, it can't hurt to send them just a thank you email for taking the time to speak with you. But one other thing too is in that thank you email, try and personalize it also. Make sure that they know that you are actually paying attention to what they were telling you about the company or what they were telling you about themselves. So that way, you know, you already are creating that personal connection with them, and you can kind of then feed off of that if you do get that second or third round interview. And another thing too is proofread your resume and your cover letter before you apply for a job. A lot of times your resume may have, you know, grammar errors all over it. And if just quick reviewing it, you'd be surprised how easily noticeable some of those things are. And if, you know, they're looking for someone who is detail oriented or, you know, a good communicator or something like that, then that may set you back and they may put your resume at the bottom solely just because, you know, you may have missed a few typos. So definitely proofread before, even, you know, reach out to a friend or your parents, ask someone to review it for you quickly, just so that way, you know, that doesn't hinder the opportunity for you. You want to make sure that you, once you get your foot in the door, you continue cultivating and really show your personality and why you want that position, but don't have grammar errors be the reason why you don't get an interview in the first place.
So just a couple questions that have popped up, and I see we have some more. So certainly feel free to drop them in the chat if you have them. If we didn't say this, feel free to connect with all of us here on LinkedIn or on social. I think we all have fairly unique names. You should be able to find us. And the other piece of advice, if you see people in the chat, you have to kind of think like, and I give this at the last one, but it's always helpful. Don't just go like big game hunting for the people that have gotten to the place where you want to be at some point. You want to try to network with the people that are, you know, your contemporaries. I've had a lot of friends, like friends of mine in law school, go on to get very big jobs in sports, but you know, at the time they were just my friends in law school, my friends in college. So if you think like, if you're in this chat, we have like 50 people in the chat, like, I don't know, you probably have something in common with the other people in here. So you never know, right? I won't call anybody out in particular, but like some people are going to have lots of mutual connections with one another. So I think that type of stuff's very helpful. Catherine asked a good question in the chat. And I think a lot of the stuff is stories. I mean, I spoke to enough people. I think I probably will know someone that has a helpful anecdote for someone. But Catherine asked a good question. When you know what area you want to work in, but you're being told to accept the fact that you may have to be in a role or a sport you're unfamiliar with because you're paying your dues. So Stephanie knows who I'm talking about, but it's someone that's risen to a very high agency. They work at a football agency, and they're a lawyer at this big agency. So this person knew he wanted to work in football. He was very confident he wanted to work in football. And he basically took a job as, I want to say, like a paralegal after having been a lawyer trained to be a lawyer. I think had a job for a period of time as a lawyer, and then like took two steps back to be a paralegal at like a music company and like a music agency. And, you know, it was kind of an agency. It was kind of sports, but it wasn't really. And sometimes you just got to, you know, make the best of an opportunity. Like this that's person,
me. I could speak to that.
Go ahead, Morgan. No, it's perfect.
No, that's me. I had a very high coveted title job at the startup, and I had to take a step back at WWE, and you just have to swallow that ego, and it's okay. You'll survive. But you've got to learn the business, got to learn the brand. I had never worked for a brand. I've always worked for sports, whether it's Players Association, or I worked for the DC State Athletic Association. So things along those lines, but I didn't have any reps working with a brand, knowing how a brand thinks, things like that. And it's okay. It's okay to take a step back, because I know for me, it will just propel me once I get those, you know, better fine-tuned skills in marketing and things like that, and learning how a brand thinks. I know that will set me up for success for the next job, the next position.
Yeah. And I kind of knew your story, but I wasn't talking about you, but there's a lot of people that have that. We talked about the guy in the last one that works for a Major League Baseball team. I know Steph knows this person as well. They're not on, so they're not going to care if I'm saying this, but practicing attorney, somehow because of writing, and we talked about this in the last one, but because of writing a lot, applied to like an externship job that they were like very overqualified for. And then like basically got an interview for a job that they were like years overqualified for, but the interview was with the general counsel of this Major League Baseball team, and they impressed because they had been writing, and I think that's helpful. So Luke asks a question as a 1L, and I know we have some non-lawyers here. So 1L is a first year law student. So generally that's someone that's like 1 year out of college, or I don't know, 2-3 years out, but someone in their early 20s. So yes, you should be connecting with people on LinkedIn. Like, but that's like, like in the old school, like I don't know how many people here, but I feel like our demographic is generally kind of young for these, which is good. Like in the old days, you would go to like these like wine and cheese, like networking events, and you'd hand out your business card. I'm like, then you'd send like one of those terrifyingly like awkward emails. Like, it was great meeting you. Like, please keep me in touch for further, you know, whenever a job pops up. So someone asked the question and I responded in the chat. But like, yeah, those targeted emails are helpful, but like they're kind of awkward, and they're, you know, and if you want to follow up for like, hey, I messaged you a couple months ago, like any jobs yet? Any jobbers for me? Any jobbies? Like, those are really uncomfortable emails. And like, you know, like it's hard to do. So I pointed this out, but this is maybe the biggest takeaway that we can give you. Like, if in the event that you know, somebody has a job to give, the person they're going to try to give the job to is someone that they know how this person ticks. They know their DNA. Like, you know, some people, like Stephanie and I knew each other for about almost 2 years, maybe a year and a half, before I gave her the job at the law firm we were at. And I had a sense of who Stephanie was, like right place, right time. The harder you work, the luckier you get. Like, Stephanie and I had been speaking for a year and a half, and like felt like I knew her pretty well when I hired her for that role. So if your first outreach, and John Nucci mentioned this in the chat, if your first outreach to someone is like, hey, I'm desperate for a summer job. Like, I'm desperate for a job 1L summer. Like, can you help me out? Like, you know, get to the back of the line. Like, there's people that have been working on this relationship for years. Like, I've gone out to coffee with people, talked to people pretty regularly, people that I've seen write articles that have been there. So that's why as a 1L, it's fantastic. You have this, like, this secret cheat code that no one else really has, that you don't have when you leave school. As a 1L, you can have informational calls with anyone. You are non, like, I'll put this in quotes, like non-threatening to like an employer, because like, you just want an informational call. You're probably not looking for a job. You're not desperate for a job. So it's an expression, right? It's you know, job hunt is certainly a marathon. It's not a sprint. And if you're waiting to sprint, like right at like your, you know, June before the summer, like you're in trouble. But if you're doing this as a fall 1L, like in September, and you're looking for jobs for June, you can have those calls. You can have follow-ups on your follow-ups. You can be posting stuff on LinkedIn to remind people who you are. I think that stuff's so helpful. But like, you know, I think even resharing articles or reposting stuff, people see that. Maybe one other kind of little targeted thing. I'm not going to call anybody out, but some people, I look at their LinkedIn profiles and it's like nothing. There's like no information. you have like under 500 connections, and there's a little cheat code for LinkedIn. Once you hit 501 connections, it just says 500 plus connections. And then no one knows if you have 505 or 1,000. But, you know, I'm someone that like, I look when people have under 100, you know, under 500 connections on LinkedIn, I know they're not really serious about networking. And networking, as much as it's helpful to get a job, part of being an attorney, like, is having a strong network and seeing how that could help you in your place of employment. So I look to see how many followers and connections people have on LinkedIn. I think that thing is, I think it's very helpful.
Real quick, too, Steph, go ahead. Going off of that, because someone that we alluded to earlier who has risen the ranks at a very early age is now at a very prominent organization, said the exact same thing. You know, a lot of people, if you reach out to them, they're going to look you up first. And if you're, you know, saying that you want to network with them and whatnot, having less than 500 connections does give people the assumption that you may not be as serious or passionate about, you know, the sports industry as a whole and in networking as a whole. So definitely try and get those connections up if you can, but make sure you're also intentional about those connections too.
Or just add one point as well. Yeah, that people want to hire people they like and that they want to work with, right? So cultivating those relationships over time is really the key. Like, that's how I got my job. That's, I would speak with my bosses or the people I met at Paradigm after, in between coming back to Paradigm and while I was still in law school, and just maintaining those relationships, adding value with either articles or, you know, emails to them that just say, hey, look, like, this is what happened in the industry. How do you think this will affect your business? This is how I think it'll affect your business. That stuff goes a long way, and not everybody does it, right? So I think just continuing to just be persistent, not annoying, right? But just like continuing to just have those relationships is really how you get to where you want to get.
Don't forget to take a good social health check and look at your social media, because not only are people looking at your LinkedIn, but what are you posting on Twitter? What type of vibe are they getting from you? Are you posting anything that could embarrass the company that you potentially be hired for?
So I'm only laughing. Morgan and I know someone who's a little bit older that posts some cringy stuff on social media. So even as an older attorney, you can't forget that. So once you get to where you want to go, don't forget that, like, people are still looking at your socials. So I'm not gonna call anyone out in particular, but I spoke to someone who I see in the chat. Their name has an L in it, so maybe they'll figure out who I'm talking about. So there's a question. You know, I think it's come up from majority. So, you know, Aaron Eichel asked a question, and Logan Hughes asked a question, and they're I think getting to the same point. So, like, how do you get a job, you know, in the world of NIL? Like, I think that's important, right? Logan's asking, if he's at a smaller law school and you want to practice at a bigger firm, how do you set yourself apart? Like, interesting. So this person whose name has an L in it recently explained to me that they got hired. And it's someone that writes pretty regularly for our site, Conduct Detrimental, shameless plug. If you do want to publish, you can publish through our site. That's the only reason that we created our website, so people could be like published authors. And, you know, stuff can go to industry people. We have athletic directors that read our blog, listen to our podcast. So, you know, publishing is a way to put yourself out there, and it looks pretty prestigious. So this person with an L told me, and I love hearing success stories, that they were writing a lot about a particular sport. And they were just at a job interview with a law firm. And this person on their resume said, oh, it's so interesting. You're right. I think I could say that the sport is soccer. And this person was writing a lot about soccer and had it on their resume, which is cool. Conduct Detrimental. I posted this article, whatever the article was, whatever the date was. And the potential employer, I gather, was a very big soccer fan, and like that wasn't going to be present otherwise on the person's resume. They didn't, you know, they weren't a national champion gymnast like Morgan. Morgan, do you put that in your resume? You should, if you don't.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but like, I always find it weird when people put like hobbies and they're like skiing and like, you know, hopscotch or whatever people put as the hobbies. But like, if you write publications and you published three things in the last year, like, that's huge. That should be up front and center. And especially like, again, shameless plug, that's the reason we do it. If you don't have the sports job right now and you need to signify to people that your resume stands out in some way, shape, or form, like, publishing is a great way to do it, that you're staying active. So we have people, and I see these resumes, they wrote like a law review note about like the baseball antitrust exemption like 6 years ago. Like, congrats, the world has changed since 6 years ago. Like, you know, I think that stuff's important. The only thing that we haven't mentioned, which I think is really important, and I know people that make this mistake all the time. Yes, very important to like network with people and all this stuff. do not miss the student organizations that are like right under your nose, like being a member of the Sports Law Society, Sports Business Society, competing in I know we have a lot of law students here. Tulane has a baseball arbitration competition. It's a negotiation. At Fordham, we created the basketball negotiation competition. New York Law School has the soccer competition. You will meet, just like we have like 40 people here, right? You will meet like hundreds of people with those same exact backgrounds of yours. And I know I got a job with the baseball agency by meeting like a practicing lawyer in New Orleans. And I got a job at an agency in Chicago. So don't lose sight of those organizations. So like, you know, Aaron asked the question, like, how does he get in a job in the world of NIL? Like, I'm going to take a shot in the dark that Wisconsin, he's at UW-Madison. You guys definitely don't have like an NIL club, right? Like, create the NIL club. If there's like a French club, which exists, like, I don't know who's joining the French club, like, make the NIL club. You're the founding member and president of the NIL club at UW-Madison. I promise you that will get you on a lot of the right radar. So you got to think creatively, like think outside the box. So I think that stuff's helpful.
Yeah. And for NIL too, like, I'm happy for anybody if they want to like slide into my LinkedIn DMs, anything like that, for more pointed advice on how to get in. But I will just like keep it short and say the beauty is that it is ever changing and there's so many topics out there what the future will look like. So if you can start to educate yourselves and almost predict the future of what revenue share would look like, what would it mean if athletes are employees? How does that affect Title IX? And start tailoring your expertise in those areas, have a better shot of landing the job in NIL. And those things too are applicable outside of NIL like as well.
I'm gonna give, we got about 10 minutes here. So these questions are great. And Stephanie, thank you for responding to a lot of questions in chat. So if people don't have the chat open, Steph's answering a lot of good questions and providing valuable advice there. I see someone else that's in attendance. I'm not gonna say their name just unless they say it's okay, but they have an M in their name. Maybe again, that's helpful. But, you know, in our world right now, like of things that are popping up that you should start to be thinking about. So let's say like you're sitting here and you're like, and this was me, I'll call this out. I was not, Morgan's like, create a list and you want to be very targeted. Like, I imagine for some people here, I was just like a sports guy. So I interviewed with like the New Jersey Devils and the Indiana Pacers and a lot of jobs. I really just wanted to work in sports. That was my goal. Now, again, that's not the best way to do it. Sometimes you can pick a sport, right? Like if you're a big, you know, MMA guy or big football or big in baseball, but sometimes it's really helpful to pick an area. So sports betting was something that's been picking up steam. Like there's a lot of jobs in sports betting. There's a lot of jobs in NIL. Now AI seems to be the next wave where there will probably be a need for people that understand sports and that understand artificial intelligence, Web3, you know, everything in between. So I think that types of stuff's helpful. The story, I won't call them out, but I imagine they'll know what I'm talking about. There's someone that same like Morgan didn't have like the right job lined up after law school, like just kind of figuring out sitting on the sidelines. And this person started to contribute a lot of content in the gambling space, really educating themselves on the gambling space. And if you're listening to this, I imagine you're a sports person in some way, shape or form. The sports world and the gambling world very much aligned. There are leagues, teams that are looking for people with that particular background. So this person recently announced they got a job at one of these startup leagues because of their gambling background. So, you know, sat on the sidelines, took a little bit of a wait, didn't take one of those firm jobs that, you know, everyone hates and are soul sucking and all that fun stuff, and got a job at a sports league because of the gambling articles they were writing. So if you're here sensing this theme, it's like, you know, you might get lucky, right? You might be, you know, Morgan got really lucky that WWE was a partner of where she was at and she did a great job. John, I want to say got lucky, and I'll tell you why we're putting in the quotes in a second, but they had a professor who worked for MMA. You still have to really impress those people. But let's say you don't have someone in those circles, right? And maybe you do, but you also have to be doing things that people aren't thinking about. Writing and producing and creating content, like that's a lot of what Stephanie and I do on Conduct Detrimental. That's ways to meet people outside of your network. So I'm going to tell you another, just a quick story. I talk to a lot of people like you, so I hear these stories. We recently on our podcast, an athletic director of a Power 5 program in the Midwest, I won't say what school it is, but reached out to one of our contributors and said, I loved your comments on the recent podcast. So like, you don't know who's reading things. Like Stephanie wrote an article about Giannis Antetokounmpo's lawyer. How'd I do on the pronunciation? Antetokounmpo?
That's good. That's great. Okay.
But like, again, I told this on the last one, but like, you don't know who's paying attention at any point in time. Like Stephanie wrote about Giannis's lawyer, and guess who read her article? Giannis's lawyer. Guess who hired her? Giannis's lawyer. And then like Stephanie all of a sudden was an attorney basically a year out of school who was working in a pretty high level sports intellectual property capacity. And guess who was looking for a second year lawyer, like Major League Baseball. So Stephanie's at Major League Baseball, but it happened because of writing. Like I can tell you 100 stories like that. So you might, you know, get lucky and you don't need to write. You just meet someone and people look you in the eye and you, you know, identify you as someone you want to work with. But let's say, you know, to Logan Hughes' question in the comments, let's say, and somebody asked me this the other day, someone was in North Dakota and they're not, Logan's not North Dakota. Logan, I think, is in Ohio, but don't quote me on that. But they were in North Dakota and they're like, how do I get a job in a big market like California or Florida? Do I have to transfer law schools? And I'm like, no, that's the magic of being on Zoom. That's the magic of just writing content. Like you haven't taken the bar yet. It doesn't really matter where you're at. You can move, you're portable. You know, someone who's not on this, Holly Summers is one of our contributors to our NIL podcast on our show, Chronic Detrimental. And Holly's got connections at LSU. Holly's got connections in New York. Holly's got connections in California. She's very good at reaching out to people and marketing herself. So I think that's very helpful and a lot of informational phone calls. But go ahead, Steph. Do you want to jump in here?
I actually was just about to reply to Zahan's question. Apologies if I pronounced that wrong, but he had an interesting question where he asked, is it a good idea to plug your publications or blogs or any other written work on your resume to try and break the ice in an interview or whatnot? And at least in my experience on my resume, I have an additional experience section where I have my professional experience, which is kind of all of the key, most recent, you know, companies that I've worked for and whatnot. And then additional experience, I highlight, you know, I worked for Monumental Sports and Entertainment in college or like the Baltimore Orioles. So while that doesn't need, you know, some bullet points explaining exactly what I did, I just have, you know, the company, what my position was and when that was. And I also have kind of detrimental on it. So that way, you know, when someone's looking at your resume, they are kind of immediately seeing, okay, you're going the extra mile. You're in your free time. You're writing articles so that you are staying on top of industry news and whatnot. And I know a lot of people do also have an interests section at the bottom of their resume, because that then, you know, immediately will break the ice in an interview if someone says, oh, I see that, you know, you like to run or something. And that's obviously something that then you guys can just ease into the conversation about more serious, you know, work candidate type of stuff, but really start off the bat in cultivating that personal relationship first and foremost. And like John said, people want to work with someone that they actually like and they enjoy being around. So I think having, you know, that human element to your resume is never a bad thing.
Okay, so I have one quick story and then we'll wrap. We'll try to close this exactly right around one. Let's do as best we can. So Bolin Grayson asks a great question. That was almost a tongue tie, but it reminds me. So getting to 500, be intentional. Right? You can follow a bunch of randos, but like I don't know. That seems you pick, right? I would think you want to start with people that have a connection to you, like. You know, what law school you went to, what undergrad you went to, if they currently live in your town, maybe you're the same employer. I have no problem with that. I do have a good story. And this is kind of like, you know, don't just like send 1,000 emails out. Like I want people to really think of how the path to kind of like build this kind of layered networking path. And John Nucci in the chat is one of our conduct team members. John, a quick story about John, and I think this is just helpful. John is a big golf guy. There are not many like golf law people, like John's maybe one of two in like the country. And John is just graduated law school. And John is now getting invites like to go on Amazon to give, to give like interviews. I did see that email, John, John's getting asked to go on No Laying Up podcasts, like huge platforms. And who's John? Like, and no offense, John, you know, I love you, Jeff. John is a really bright dude, but went on social media and was just basically putting out, like, I'm going to put in quotes, like writing samples. So like, yes, you could send a writing sample to whatever employer you are. So that's one person is getting that writing sample and they're evaluating it and seeing if you should get considered for a job. But so why LinkedIn's helpful or Twitter or Instagram or any of these platforms. If you put something out on social media, like not just the one person you're sending your writing sample to will see it, like, I don't know, like thousands of people will see it, maybe millions of people. John's had tweets that millions of people have seen. So that's good or bad, depending on if you want to get on the Saudi's bad side, but you know, it happens. John puts out a lot of content. John's now built up a big following And, you know, it's helpful for John. So related story. So people, I think, will know Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles. He's a former, he went to my law school. He's obviously older than us, but he was a crazy person. I think that's okay to say, but like he sent letters out to every single general manager at every single team between basketball, football, baseball, hockey, like everything. He was just like obsessed. And, you know, no one was really answering him, but then I think he started sending it to scouts and assistant GMs and eventually got this guy, Mike Tannenbaum, who's ended up becoming the GM of the Jets at some point in time. And he spoke to this guy, Mike, when he wasn't like the guy, he was like, you know, somewhere up the totem pole. So he started finally like getting a hold of lower people on the totem pole. And when those people rose to power, they could then vouch that Howie Roseman was a normal person. I've spoke to him on the phone. He's a really normal guy. So again, you can go big game hunting. You can friend whoever you want on LinkedIn, but sometimes I think it helps to reach out to people that are maybe just starting at a firm. So like Morgan has been at WWE for less than 2 years, or you hit 2 years? No, less than a year.
I'll hit a year in September.
Like John has been at Paradigm for like a small amount of time. So like maybe you're not going to get the CEO of the company who's going to respond to your emails, but like Morgan and John are taking an hour out of their day to have this conversation. So those are the type of people you want to reach out to. Okay. As we're wrapping, Stephanie, you want to kind of have the last word and then we'll kind of go around the horn.
Yeah. I mean, I think this was obviously, thank you, John and Morgan, for being here. I think hopefully you guys came away with a few extra tips and tricks so that you can use them as you try and enter into the sports industry or, you know, achieve that dream job in, you know, whatever sports team or league or college, university that you may want to go work for. And as always, you know, if you guys have any other questions, feel free to try out some of the tips and tricks that we've given you on us. I think I can probably speak for all of us that we're probably pretty open to, you know, continuing the conversation after the fact. So I'll let John and Morgan share their LinkedIns and emails or whatever else you guys want to give them. But yeah, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. It's probably the best way to start.
Morgan, kind of final thoughts, anything we didn't hit on, people we're, you know, anything that we haven't discussed on today?
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, final thoughts. Thank you guys for having me. You can follow me, send message. Everything's the same. Morgan Belvedere, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. I'll just say in a world where everybody's trying to be something different, be yourself and lean on what makes you, you, and searching for a job, finding your passions, things like that, you'll be much happier in the long run.
John, how are you doing? 109 degree temperature? Has it gone down at all?
No. We're doing all right. We're doing
Jordan Flutie. You made it through.
I would just say, like, you create your own luck, right? So put yourself in the right rooms, be active, reach out to people that you're interested to, you know, learn about and see what they're doing. And don't stop, be relentless and don't be afraid to go after what you want. And then, yeah. So thank you to Dan, Stephanie, Morgan. Very nice to meet you. Don't hesitate to reach out on LinkedIn or Instagram. I'm available and, you know, I love speaking with students and, you know, different like-minded people. So thanks again.
Okay. So I think we can end it here. Again, reach out to all of us. If you don't have questions or if you have questions separately, you can reach out. We'll come back. Rest assured, if you want to sign up for us in like Eventbrite, maybe that's the way to do it, but we'll be back. I think the last Friday of August, we'll do this at least twice as we finish up the summer. But Morgan, John, you were great. Stephanie, thanks for arranging this. And yeah, this was excellent. So thanks everyone for coming and have a great weekend. Thanks everyone. So that was the second installment of our sports professional development series. Big thank you to Stephanie for organizing. She's the one behind all the fancy graphics. And thank you to Morgan and John. We'll put their names in the show notes just so people can know how to find them on socials, but all great follows. You should reach out. And then if for whatever reason you're having trouble finding them, I'm happy to point you in the right direction. So, I think this will translate for the most part. You can hear a lot of the conversation in the chat. We had some good questions answered, and I provided my favorite expression that my dad once taught me when I was very little, and I thought he made it up. And I was like, very proud of my dad. He came up with this cool expression. The harder you work, the luckier you get. And the more you're kind of, you know, you're trying to impress your professors or the clients or you're networking at work. And then on top of it, you're sending out content. Like if you're putting the hours in to try to make an impression somewhere, to try to get somewhere in the sports space, like oh, all of a sudden it's so weird. Like I'm getting a lot of calls. Hey, I'm all of a sudden more of my resumes are resulting in second interviews, right? Like it, the harder you work, the luckier you get. So all we're trying to do is give people different paths to get there. There's an expression about skinning a cat, but it's a gross expression and I'm not going to say it, but people know what I'm getting at. So, if you really want to work in sports, it's not going to happen by sitting on your hands. If you have a son or a friend that wants to work in sports, feel free to steal any of this advice. You know, we're just trying to make the industry better as a whole. Zach, listen, I feel like we're doing a service here, but you know, we have some fun obviously along the way.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. Tons of great information. One of the quotes you mentioned, your favorite quote that your dad had, one of the ones, I think it might was you that said it again. It's not about getting your foot in the door. It's about knocking the door down or off its hinges.
That's a sports law special. I will take credit. I've never heard it, but that's how I feel. If you get your foot in like one crack, you know, you got to impress. So, everybody talks about getting that job. And actually, quick shout out. He's a core team member of ours, Justin Mader. You know, he's been on the podcast a couple times, you know, actually a bunch of times. He's been producing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Justin just got a job in the gambling space for pickleball. We could say it's now public. He put it on LinkedIn. And, you know, I was telling him, he was all happy he got this new job. And I'm super proud for him and I'm happy for him. But I said, this is not it. This is like chapter one. You know, you gotta, you know, we can have a celebration once you get, you know, the promotion or you get a raise, like, you know, let's up the ante a little bit. So don't just get your foot in the door. Like let's make sure that door doesn't close. So, it's all good. Yeah. Enough. We'll get off our soapbox for this part. I want to talk a little bit. Zach, are you watching anything sports related? We do this segment. I try to do it like once a month. Our segment called What to Watch For, sponsored by our friends over at Themis Bar Review. I know the bar exam just ended. So listen, if you have an anxiety about the bar popping up and you're like, oh, I don't even know what I'm going to do next year, Themis Bar Review is your place to go. And God forbid, if things in the bar exam don't go that well, Themis will hook you up. Themis will hook you up for round two. So if that other bar prep side didn't do you well, Themis will help you the second time around. But it is what it is. So yes, Themis Bar Review, our place to go. Zach, what to watch for? Anything good that you have seen in sports or otherwise? I don't want to limit you to sports.
Well, definitely within sports, I've watched there was a new season of Full Swing that came out recently that I've been watching. Went through and started the show. I hadn't seen any of it before, which has been really interesting, kind of eye-opening. It's kind of the Formula One Drive to Survive model applied to the PGA Tour. So really interesting. It also is fascinating because it really coincided with all the news about LIV Golf kind of coming to be and existing. And now we're hearing about the merger with the PGA. So that's definitely been really, really interesting. And then otherwise, you know, one of the last times I was on the podcast, Dan, you'd given me a little bit of heat for not watching Succession. I don't know if that ended up making it into the episode or not, but I've definitely started to watch that as well. So getting a little bit more into that show. So you have so far been right, really enjoying that. And then if you're looking for something a little bit more sports related instead of Succession on HBO, then definitely go give Full Swing a watch.
I hand out recommendations. I'd like to pride myself. I don't really give out recommendations unless I've seen it. I enjoy it. I watch a lot of TV when I'm working and sitting up late. You know, I always got something on the background. That's my ADD brain. I need something to be working on in the background. Succession, I love. We had we recently switched from a nanny system to an au pair system. So we have an au pair who not familiar, you know, with my we'll say I hate to keep calling myself an old man, but I'm an old man now, and our au pair is probably about 10 years younger than me, and I'm like, you know, you gotta check out some of those, you know, she was saying she watched Euphoria and all the big Succession, she was watching those shows. I'm like, what about a generation before that? How about some Sopranos? How about some Entourage? So I'm all for recommendations. So here's one. I Netflix just knows at this point. So I have my daughter, you know, I have two daughters. We all share the same Netflix account. So Netflix either recommends me like, you know, like Peppa Pig, or Cocomelon, or something in sports. It really, I think it just knows me at this point. So I got a crazy recommendation. I had not heard of anyone tell me this. So this is my recommendation. The show is called King of Collectibles, The Golden Touch. And if that name Golden sounds familiar, it's because it is. That's Ken Golden of Golden Auctions. So it's kind of like Pawn Stars meets like sports collectibles. It's very cool. It's very well done. It's basically sports auctions, and they're going around. It's obviously all, you know, campy a little bit, but they're getting like Jackie Robinson stuff. They're getting like the LeBron James triple logo, man. I think it's done very well. And the reason I want to recommend it for both guys and gals, my wife, who I've mentioned is not a sports person by any means, we went on a little bit of a binge here, a little bit of a binge, which is very rare for sports shows with Rachel. So yeah, check out King of Collectibles, The Golden Touch. And they didn't pay us a dime to say that, but I just think it's very good. And then I guess, oh, the other one, I watched Quarterback on Netflix. It's very good. I don't know. Colin talked about it last time. I think everyone's seen it by now. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's Kirk Cousins, Marcus Mariota, Patrick Mahomes. I think whoever was listening to our recent episode, we were talking about it. Conlon said, you know, that I was asking about Brittany Mahomes, how her edit was. You know, I'm not a fan of Brittany Mahomes. And I think this was a pretty favorable edit to her, all things considered, because, you know, I think Mahomes is behind it and he had to try to make it a good edit for all the players. I'm not a fan of Brittany Mahomes. I'm not. So I've seen the stuff on social. I gave her a chance. You know, she's a mom, you know, she's got little kids just like my wife, and I, you know, just not a fan. She's not my cup of tea. I feel like that's okay, Zach. I don't have to like everybody. Don't like Brittany Mahomes.
Yeah, that's definitely okay. I haven't watched the full show yet, but I've seen some clips because it's been talked about, you know, was the edit that she got good? Was it bad? You know, kind of discussing it. And I've seen some of those clips, and I tend to have to agree with you. I mean, it's pretty favorable. I mean, there's definitely some points, but I think overall it was fairly favorable, and you know, not too much to really raise eyebrows about or complain about. Now, I could be wrong. That's just my opinion, but I tend to have to agree with you, Dan.
All good, Zach. I feel like this episode's been a little long, but you know, it's all good. And no NIL hour this week, so just us. So you know, we want to give you some sports law content each and every week. So that'll do it. You know, we'll see what we have coming down the pike. But I just want to remind people, we the newsletter is back. Holly Summers, who is on our NIL Hour podcast, has brought it back. We now have an NIL, or it's not really an NIL newsletter. It's a sports law. It's called the Sports Law Brief. You can find it on our website if you want to subscribe. But that goes to about 2,000 people each and every Friday. So it's kind of the recap of all the different stuff we're working on, stories, stuff that people are publishing. Again, you'd be surprised at the industry people that are strangely aware and strangely listen to this podcast. So if we don't say thank you enough, we mean it. You guys are the lifeblood that supports our show. And yeah, so awesome. If you want to drop us a note, if you want to get involved in Conduct Detrimental, we have some new 1Ls coming aboard, some pre-law kids getting involved. So the younger, the better. We can bring you up the ranks, and we're certainly happy to. So shout out to Mike, Taryn, Holly over the NIL Hour. And yeah, Zach, excellent job. For myself, Dan Wallach, all of us here at Conduct Detrimental, we will see you next week on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.